And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 58 of The Roundtable. Still no sign of Grant Brisby. If you're somewhere in Alaska and you see him, wave and tell him we miss him back in the lower 48th. But, you know, who knows? He's on vacation, maybe never to be seen again. But we do have Mark Carrig. Mark, you're here. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine. I'm not on a sea vessel somewhere, so I'm doing great.
That's
yeah.
Good.
How are you? Yeah, good. Everything's fine.
Well, Mark, everyone's been asking, as the trade deadline approaches, what in the Sam Hill is going to happen with Shohei Ohtani? We had a better solution. Why don't we have Sam Blum? And I don't know. That's terrible. This show stinks. I don't know if you are a regular roundtable head, Sam, but this is kind of what we do. We have Sam Blum, our wonderful Angels writer here, talk all about Ohtani, talk about the deadline, Artie Moreno, Perry Minazian, the classic Los Angeles Angels story. Sam, how are you?
I'm good. Good. Thanks for having me.
Can I start with something specific? Because I thought about this right away, and it reminds me of a classic Andy McCullough story. Tell me about this goodbye photo with Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, man.
Did you see this,
Andy?
What
the heck? Yeah. What the? And there were, okay. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Give us the full sweep here, Sam. Fire away.
I mean, I think it got blown a little out of proportion because there is the obvious risk that, you know, this was the last home game before the trade deadline. And so I think everybody recognize that there was this, you know, maybe not a big chance, but a chance that that could have been his last home game, which means, you know, obviously we work with all these reporters every day who may, you know, pack up and leave from Atlanta and not ever show up to Angel Stadium ever again. And so, you know, it was I might get in trouble for this. It was actually the Angels PR that wanted to do this.
I had a question related to that as well. Yeah, go.
Which, I mean, like, I don't blame them. I think it's, you know, we all work together. So this was a nice little, you know, potential memento for us to have if he does end up leaving in, you know, at the trade deadline for whatever reason. So, yeah, it was funny. It definitely, people were really upset about it because, it implies that he might go. But
dude, I cracked up when I saw it for that reason.
There's a lot of smoke, you know, out there that maybe the Angels baseball operations department is more interested in trading Ohtani than the ownership group is, but I didn't know they would put the PR staff up for organizing a photo op. That seems a bit strong.
They have the photographer there and everything. I mean, you could see, I mean, the photographer, the team photographer is the one taking it, and you can see it in the tweet. So it's, yeah.
That's what I liked about the tweet. And if you guys haven't seen this, I can't even remember whose feed it was on. Sam, I think you retweeted it, though.
It was Luca Evans, who is a Los Angeles Times.
Luca, right. Okay, yes, Northern California guy, by the way. Anyhow, so what I loved about the picture was the whole behind-the-scenes aspect. You couldn't even see Ohtani in the picture from the angle.
Is Ohtani in the picture?
Oh, no, he would. He might have walked past us like he always does and you know, barely acknowledged.
Wait a minute, he's not? Because I thought like he was tucked behind somebody, and that made me laugh.
No, I would love it if he were in the picture. That would involve him acknowledging us more than once a week.
Holy hell! Like I just misread the whole thing entirely. Then this has nothing to do with the time that Andy stiffed Mariano Rivera for lunch. Anyway, go on.
I didn't. I mean, I guess I did. Yeah.
I knew it would get overblown, which is why I retweeted it. But also, I think it did get overblown because I think it's something that, you know, it's a nice thing to do. It's we all work with these people, you know, and we have a chance to get to know these Japanese reporters that come from across the world, obviously, just to be there to cover Otani. And you know, we get pretty close with them. So it's, even though our jobs are a lot different at times, if everyone were to leave, I'd honestly be sad. I would probably miss them more than all the stuff that we deal with Otani on a regular basis. So I like the photo. I'm happy I have it. And if he doesn't getting traded, it's something, you know, hopefully they actually send it to us and we can keep, because it's nice. So I think that's why it's a little overblown, but it is. I mean, I knew people would react to it.
It's a nice memento. It's just a bit gallows humorish for the PR staff to organize it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure how happy they were with the tweet, but I didn't tweet it, so it's not my problem.
Yeah. Good times. By the way, Mark,
the
only two-way superstar in there is Doug Padilla. The absolute legend, Doug Padilla.
Oh my God, that's so good. Hey, did you hear this story about when Manny Machado was going to get traded from Baltimore? I guess he rounded up the beat.
Oh yeah, him crying at the All-Star game?
Something like that, yeah. I thought there was a supply closet involved or whatever. Anyway.
You know who's crying at the All-Star game? Me, trying to confirm what the frick was happening that day. That was a very frustrating All-Star game, Mark. Let me tell you. The Baltimore Orioles were trading him to the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we couldn't figure out if the trade was actually happening.
I thought you were talking about this recent All-Star game. I was like, what did I miss?
No, All-Star game where Machado, you know, gathered, because it was in D.C. And so all the Baltimore writers were there. And so he was like, oh, yes. Am I getting traded? And that was me to, like, Dodgers officials be like, are you trading Manny Machado?
It's an emotional time for everyone involved.
Yeah, good times. Sam, what's going to happen in the next week?
Oh, man. Well, a lot of it depends on the way they play in the next week, in my opinion. I'm not sure if that should be the calculation that the Angels are making or not, but I do think it is. Obviously, they got the Tigers coming up in the next 3 days, and then they go right to Toronto, and that series in Toronto is going to be pretty important for them because that's the team they're chasing in the wild card. They're 4.5 games back now, I think, because the Blue Jays beat the Dodgers late last night. Yeah, I think it's going to come down to if they feel like they're right there in the mix, if they have they're looking for a justification to keep him. If they wanted to get rid of him, and they wanted to get the haul back, they would have done this a year ago. They would have traded him, or even in the offseason. But, you know, they saw this one-year opportunity to get to the playoffs with Otani. So if they think they have a chance to do that this season, I'm sure they're going to go for it. Now, I don't know if that's the smart thing, because there's a really good case to be made that, hey, they're going to – even if they do win over the next week and they're still like 2 or 3 games back and they don't make a run and make the playoffs, he might just leave anyway. They might have traded away more of their prospects as buyers. And then – it all could come crashing down in the offseason. So there may be some pros and cons to them even having a good week this week. You know, you can make a case that's in their best interest to not do well, but I don't think that's how anyone with the Angels is looking at it.
When you said they are looking for an excuse to keep him, I mean, is that front office ownership, the people in uniform, like, do those groups feel distinct to you in how they're approaching this?
And obviously the players and the managers and the coaching staff, I mean, they're always going to try to win. I don't, you know, especially someone like Phil Nevin, who's on a 1-year contract, and there's no reason for him to think about long-term.
That'd be kind of funny if he was like, we got to trade this guy.
Perry's contract goes through next season, so his incentives might be similar to Phil's in the sense that, I mean, if he were to go another year without making the playoffs, I mean, I don't know how guaranteed he is to be here beyond this season, so... Now, if you were to put all those guys on long-term contracts, I think you might have a different, you know, incentive structure here. Artie, again, he might also be year-to-year. He was going to sell the team a year ago, and he came back, and I think a lot of that might have been with this idea in mind that they could get to the playoffs and actually, you know, fix his absolutely horrible legacy that if he were to have left last year, what it would have been. So, yeah, and I think your question more relates to, yeah, like, are they looking at things differently? I think it, you know, in general, Artie's GM is maybe look at baseball in a different way than Artie does. But I generally think that they're all looking for reasons to be able to be competitive this year. So I think what I'm trying to say is that there's differing reasons maybe for it, but they all kind of have the same incentives and the same desires here over the next week.
I spoke to you soon last week because, you know, the club hadn't been going the right direction for a bit. And I'm like, oh, that's it. They're done. It's time. then of course I don't think they've lost since. So I guess like this club's been up and down, obviously. I think folks at this point kind of know somewhat what they are, all right? They know what the issues are facing them. Obviously, some injuries, Trout being the biggest, most prominent example. But I wonder, as someone who's watched them every day, if this fever dream comes true and they have made a run at this and they have made it competitive, that they keep Ohtani, it was the right thing to do, they've kept winning, how would that have happened? Okay, like, if you know what I mean? Like, what are the three things that basically would have to fall into place, let's say, for this, like, very optimistic scenario to come to pass? You know, I'd imagine that, you know, Trout has come back and is like, fine, you know, so that's just your free square. But what are the others that would have had to have, like, gone right? Because what I'm trying to figure out is, how likely is that? Does this sound insane to say out loud? Or when you say it out loud, am I like, that's reasonable?
I mean, listen, they got, like, I think Fangraphs has them at like 13% maybe to make the playoffs. And I think Baseball Reference like a little below 9%. So, yeah, that's not likely.
So you're saying there's a chance.
That's like sending a pitcher to bat and hoping he gets a double. I mean, I don't know. It's just it's not likely. I mean, they would kind of, they're starting pitching's ironically. I think that was the one area they felt really confident coming into the season would be one of their strengths. And that has not been the strength of this team at all. So maybe if guys like Reed Detmers and Patrick Sandoval and even Tyler Anderson, who they signed for, you know, 3 years of $39 million and lost a draft pick and some international signing money over, would those guys end up playing well? Like, that could be big for them. I mean, like you said, Trout can come back. Zach Neto is out right now, and we're not certain how long he'll be out. If it's going to be an IL situation, that's something we'll probably learn in the next couple hours. So that could be pretty big for them too. He's kind of been their shortstop that came up and they got lucky. He's really hit. There's a lot of little things that I think kind of need to happen. And yeah, it would be super unlikely for them to make a run, in my opinion. Those percentages, I think, are fairly accurate. I mean, they could go and have a really good week in Toronto, but their schedule in the rest of August is really tough as well. They go right to Atlanta after that on the road and then come home and play the Giants and the Mariners, teams that are playing well and, you know, also competing for a playoff spot. So it's a really tough ask, I think, of them. And I think that's why they should be really, really prudent. If you're really in the best interest of winning, they would consider being sellers, in my opinion, even if they're only three or four games out of a playoff spot come next week. That's just the smart way to look at things. I think most teams in most situations would consider themselves sellers in that scenario, but the Angels have Ohtani and it makes things way more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it felt like with Juan Soto last year, it was kind of obvious that they had to trade him just to maximize his value, I guess, because the franchise was in a rebuild mode. It's just, all right, let's go back a second. When you hear from Angels fans, outside of a reality in which the team is actually like on a 95 win pace, what do they want to happen?
Oh man, there's so many different, there's like, it's like the rest of the world. Like I think most Angels fans want them to win and they want to make the play. I mean, like
win 88 games with Ohtani, make the playoffs.
Everyone was super mad at the Dodgers last night because they like blew it against the Blue Jays. And so like people are scoreboard watching. It's like, you know, I've covered the Angels now for a little over 2 years. And so it's, you know, most of the time by this time of year, it feels like it's like scoreboard watching is useless. I mean, it's there. This time last year, they were like 11 games out of a playoff spot. So they're invested. They're looking for a reason to be invested. This team has not made the playoffs since 2014. They have not had a winning record since 2015. And they're two games above 500. And so they're on a trajectory to at least have their best year in 8 seasons. And so at the very least, I think people are, yeah, they want to see a team win and they don't want to see the team trade away players. But I guess the way I look at it is, you know, you're trying to, this is a long-term situation here. I mean, the Angels are not just competing for 2023. And I think the biggest risk is that if they were to go all in on a 2023 where the playoffs are not likely, they're possible, but not likely, you're mortgaging potentially a lot of your future on that. Even though they've had some good young players coming up, I still think you're really risking just like a complete failure. And that's dangerous. It's a huge risk, in my opinion. It means they can make the playoffs, but it also means that they could not make the playoffs for years to come because of it.
I guess my counter would be just the thought that the issue with the Angels there's lots of issues with the Angels. One of them is the player development system has not built a pipeline that has forced them to spend in free agency. They haven't spent great in free agency, blah, blah, blah. But they don't have a flow of like the Dodgers or, you know, the Cardinals or whatever, right? If they don't have that pipeline in place, what difference does 4 prospects make?
Yeah, I mean, listen, look at who they've drafted over the last three seasons. It's almost all college players, and a part of me thinks that they're trying to get as many players that are just they could call up soon. I don't know how much they do trust their player development. I think that's probably part of it.
I mean, that was the point I was going to raise, Andy. It was like, if Artie Moreno is year to year two, like as Sam said earlier, potentially, he was just trying to sell this team. Like, if you're him, what do you care about, like, mortgaging the future? Like, you're probably not going to be here 5 years from now. Like, if you're talking about selling the team or whatever, like, I mean, why not, right? Like, I'm just saying, like, thinking out loud, what's the big deal then? If, like, this might be, as you said, that's a striking thing to say, by the way, that this might be their best season in 8 years.
yeah.
I mean, that's like, they're 2 games over .500. It's their best season in 8 years.
Yeah, well, they haven't been really bad.
Right. So, but my point is, like, at that, yes, they've been bad. So, very good. This is a sharp analysis that we are here for.
Mark,
he's not wrong.
Man's not wrong.
They're very bad, but like,
they haven't been good.
They have not been good. They've been bad.
The Angels.
But they should put that on the billboard right by that big giant A in the parking lot.
God, that killed me. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Just have it go around the marquee when they decide to turn it on. Anyway, like, yeah, I mean, then why not, right? Like, screw it. If it feels like there's that year to year feeling potentially all the way up to the top, like, what future? Does it matter?
Right. Yeah.
The value of the overall team would go down if they felt like they weren't in position to compete. Like, I think one of the reasons why this team was going to sell for more than three or around or possibly more than $3 billion, which would have topped what Steve Cohen paid for the Mets, was having Ohtani and an owner getting a chance to come in and pitch him on the idea of staying long term. And so I think that, yeah, if you were to like sell the team after this season, where if they don't make the playoffs and a lot of these guys leave, as Ohtani leaves, like, you'd be selling a different asset in a lot of ways. Now, still a pretty valuable one, probably one that maybe would still even break that record, but it wouldn't be the same. And so I think that's possibly part of the equation. But you're right. I mean, that's why I think everyone is pretty dead set on this idea that they're not going to trade Ohtani unless they like really have a horrible week here and it makes no sense to keep him.
Yeah. Like when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, they were like 4 games under or something. And like, you know, they'd lost like 1,000 in a row. And, you know, the team just kind of looked like going into the break, right? They just played so poorly. But like, you know, if you're 8 games under, okay, so like it sucks. But what's, you know, but at this point, I don't know, man, just push it into the red. Like, just go. Like,
I just think that like they'd be putting themselves in a possibly, there's just a pathway for it to get really ugly. In that scenario, wherein if you trade him, you at least I think you could sell your fans on, hey, like, look at who we got, look at the future. You got Zach Neto, you got Logan Ohapi, you got Reed Detmers, you got this young core of players that like is going to come up and have a lot of success here. Whereas if he were to leave and the team does not make the playoffs and you don't get anything in return besides a draft pick, I think that it's one, it's harder to sell, but also you're generally just not going to be in as good a position. And, you know, you might see a lot of personnel changes, you know, coaching staff, front office, a lot of things could change if there is that kind of big long-term failure. So I think that's the risk. It's just is like kind of an utter meltdown. But I think that there is a much higher reward. You have a chance to make the playoffs. And if you have a chance to make the playoffs for the first time in 9 years, it's hard to just throw that away.
They need to win one of those first two games in the playoffs. If they can't get the wild card series back to Anaheim.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
They need to win one.
Because Mike Trout has never won a playoff. I mean,
that's
not breaking news.
I covered Mike Trout's entire postseason career. I covered the 2014 Kansas City Royals.
Like, see, I was just going to ask that. Like, I mean, you're in tune with these fans. Like, what if that were the outcome? Like, the very Trout-esque, like, okay, they made it. They got the thrill of September and chasing it and reaching it. And then the unceremonious end. Is that good enough? And I ask that because, like, you know, the Mets won the pennant in 2015. The next year they made the playoffs. It was one game. It was an epic game, all right? Like, it was just like, were you? You were at that one game? Oh, man. So, like, oh, it was great. I'll never forget the sound that ball made when it hit the bullpen roof. You could hear it from the other side of the ballpark.
It was quiet.
Yeah, it was, dude, it was great. Like, ball goes, Connor Gillespie, ball goes up, and you just hear, like, all these people stop breathing, right? And then the ball goes over the fence, and it hits the tin roof over the bullpen. You just hear this, like, clank, That's all you heard. I don't know. Anyway, it's one of my favorite memories because, like, I love it when a ballpark gets like that. It's the same when Rajay Davis hit that bomb in the World Series in Cleveland. It hit a railing in left field, and I heard it from the other side of the park. Like, it just made this crazy sound. Anyway, you know, Mets fans see that, and they're just like, was it worth it? I don't know. Like, they barely even, like, acknowledge the fact that that was a playoff appearance, even though in their franchise history, back-to-back postseasons are really, really rare, okay? What would the Angel fan take be from, like, kind of your sense of things?
That's a really tough one because, yeah, if they get there and they don't win another game and it's just, or if they, maybe if they get to a game three, I think is probably a difference between just losing two in a row. But yeah, that's really tough. I mean, if they were to make the playoffs, I think ending the playoff drought would be significant. It's an in between, ending the playoff drought and then losing right away. Obviously, that's still really disappointing. And I don't know what that would mean for Ohtani and the way he views this team. And that being said, I still think Ohtani might be, I don't know what the Angels are going to be able to pay him. That's the other really big part of this equation that is probably not talked about enough. Even though Artie can pay whatever to anybody, he's just not always willing to. So that's a big thing here. Some of the numbers that get thrown out about what he might make are pretty staggering and would require the Angels to go so far over. They would have to lose a lot of money through luxury tax. But yeah, that's another point. I mean, to answer your question, I think it would be worth it if they were to make the playoffs. I mean, that's just, it's so rare and it never happens. And it hasn't happened in so long. The last time they were in the playoffs, their current first baseman / third baseman was like kind of the one ruining their chances, Mike Moustakas. So it's been a long time. I think just getting there would be pretty significant. Obviously disappointing for them to lose if they were to get there, but still it's just having playoff games would be something.
Yeah, that makes sense given the context because they have, as in your words, been very bad for those 8 years. So getting there, I mean, it's a whole different thing than like the example I brought up. The Mets had won the pennant the year before. That I can see why they're just like, this is BS. This feels different game with the Angels. Yeah. Where did you sit in that game, by the way? I'm curious. Where were you?
I was there with my dad, so it was all the way up in the upper deck. We were, it was fun. It was, I grew up a Mets fan, which is why I was there. So I was one of those people that like stopped breathing, probably.
that's awesome. I love it, man. I love it. Anyway, I'm sorry. I cut you off.
No. It was fun. Fun time. Well, no, not, that's a lot of long seven-line subway rides home.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary nano experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Sam, you mentioned, I guess, Artie Moreno's sort of reticence towards paying what Otani's going to cost, right? And it's the offer's, you know, the deal's going to start with a five at the very least. It might start with a six. Steve Cohen could give him $750 million. Who the heck knows, right? I mean, like, if you're not willing to pay the guy, why didn't they just trade him this winter?
Listen, so we talked to Artie's very reclusive, but he did talk with three beat reporters in the spring, and I did ask him, would you be willing to go over the luxury tax threshold? Because he's, you know, if you recall back when the lockout was happening, he was one of four owners that was like opposed to even elevating the luxury tax as part of the negotiation. So there's the reason why is you have to kind of look at the context. Like, it's because he really views it as basically a salary cap in a lot of ways. He just won't go over it. And even if you look at what they did so far this season, when they traded for Escobar, they ended up giving away two of their pretty good pitching prospects because they didn't want to pay like the $9 million, which I think may have put them close to that number. So basically they ended up, you know, letting the Mets pay for the rest of his salary and in return giving away two players that could actually help with their future. So, I mean, like that's partly, I think, why you look at why the Angels not been good. It's because they do things like that. They think more with that as a luxury, that number as more of a salary cap than anything else. And so he did say when I asked him point blank, he said he would be willing to go over it. Now, saying he's willing to do something and actually doing it in his actual history are two very different things. He's, you know, this is just a guy who's been willing to spend a lot on big free agents, but then not do what it takes to fill the roster in. When those free agents have not hit, that's why they've, you know, as I've said, they've been bad. You got Anthony Rendon, who's like not playing baseball for them despite taking home $250,000 every day. So there's some issues with how they've kind of spent and where they've kind of spent and how they've invested. But yeah, I mean, that's, he has the money to pay, I think, what it would take to keep Otani. If he's really willing to do it, that's one thing. If he's not, then you're right. I mean, why not just trade him? I mean, you have to know. Like, you have to know what you're, like, Artie at the very least has to know what he's willing to pay to keep him. Like, I would say there's, like, probably two people that really know what could possibly happen here. And one of them's Artie and one of them's Shohei. And if he's not willing to come no matter what, he's not willing to come back no matter what, that's a deal breaker. And if Artie's not willing to spend, like, at least $600 million over the course of, you know, maybe 10 years, 8 to 10 years, then that's going to be a deal breaker because somebody is. And I don't know how much money really means to Otani in all of this, but I do think, you know, the value that he places on himself will matter. And I think doing right by his agent will matter. And I think just getting the best deal will matter for him.
It's nice to know that the two people who know what's going to happen speak to the press so frequently. So we frequently, can just ask.
Yeah. I'll give them both. I should have given them a call before I get on here and just like
be like, hey, show, it's Sam. Like, hello.
You still on for brunch Sunday? All right. Yeah, see you guys. Yeah.
It's interesting when you talk about, you know, the idea that they would lose money, like going over the luxury tax. Like when other clubs have been game planning, you know, what they're going to offer, a lot of them are thinking about all the sponsorships they'll get, you know, and the money that will come into the franchise. I mean, is it for the Angels' perspective that money is already like baked in? Like, how come, you know what I mean? Like, is it that because they're not really adding revenue if you already have Otani? Is that why they look at it as a money loser in some ways?
Listen, if you were to leave, you would lose a lot of the advertisements that they and all the people that come to the game. So, yeah, I mean, I think Artie's pretty ruthless businessman. And so, as is his top lieutenant, you know, John Carpino. So I think they're probably looking at all this stuff, too. Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably part of the equation of them not wanting to trade it. People coming to games. I mean, he generates quite a bit of revenue. I don't know how to exactly calculate exactly what that is, but it has to be significant for them. And I think that was baked into why they were so valued so highly when they were going to be sold. That's a good question. I don't know the exact answer to it, but I have to imagine it's part of the equation for them. And yeah, I mean, he will net you a certain amount of money that, you know, even if you're spending a lot, like it offsets to some extent. Now, I don't know if it's to the extent that will be palatable to the Angels ownership, though.
So obviously they're going to buy. You got me sold. So what, like, okay, in other words, what do they have to work with as far as this prospect capital or any major league access they might have? And what, in your view, would they need to do immediately to supplement the roster? You know, again, with the context of guys getting healthy and the roster sort of getting more filled out. What is the most acute need to you?
I would say probably starting, I mean, pitching, just because of where they've been this year. You know, they've already traded for two players all, you know, this season that kind of boosted their offense just with all these injuries that have happened. But I think that, like I said, the starting pitching's been what they expected to have as their probably their strength, and it's been their weakness. And so I would imagine that they would look at a starting pitcher, possibly, you know, a back-end reliever. They obviously, Carlos Estevez has been one of the best relievers in baseball this year. But besides him, they've had some guys that have really looked great at for stretches and have now, like, Chris Davinsky was, like, probably one of the better relievers in baseball as well for, like, a month or 2 months. But now he's hurt, and before that he was really bad. You know, Jacob Webb, another guy, came up really good. Now he's not as good. So they're just, like, they have some needs in their bullpen that I think would need to be addressed if they were to, you know, to be buyers. Yeah, they just played the Pirates, and I'm curious about, like, someone like David Bednar, who's still got plenty of years of control. But, you know, if you were to, like, that's the kind of player that I think the Angels would try to add, like, someone that not only is a rental and that would help them this season, but, like, you're trying to build a team that can win, you know. So if you are buyers, like, you're not putting yourself in a position where you're, like, going to be terrible next year. Like, some players with control, like player, someone like him would make a lot of sense, in my opinion.
Now, do they have what it takes for that? Because, like, you know, you mentioned Bednar, because of the team control, is going to have a higher price. And then even when you talk about starting pitching, it's a thin market, and there's a lot of people looking for the same thing. So are they, what kind of position, I guess, are the Angels in to compete in that context?
Not a fantastic one. So they have a couple players. They would, like I said, they'd be mortgaging quite a bit. I mean, they'd be losing if they were to trade someone like Edgar Caro, who's probably their best catching prospect. I guess I'm not sure if Logan Ohapi's still considered a prospect or not, but Edgar Caro is someone like that's kind of fringe top 100 right now. That would probably be their most tradable asset. I mean, he's been only 20 years old. He's in Double A right now. He's playing the Futures game. He's a really good player. And they kind of have a catcher of the future with Ohapi. So I think that would make the most sense in terms of, like, getting a really good player back that a team would want. I mean, someone like Joe Adell would be interesting. You know, he's hurt right now, and that obviously hurts their chances of actually getting a good player in return. But, I mean, he's got all those tools, and I know some team is going to think that they can kind of make him into a superstar. That would be an interesting. He's only, I think, 20, just turned 24 years old. They could also look to, like, you know, like, could flip a starting pitcher, like someone like Sandoval or Detmers, if they really wanted to, you know, make a huge splash. I mean, they did that last year, trading Brandon Marsh, a really good young player, for Ohapi. So, they, you know, there's a lot of options that they could, there's a lot of routes they could go if they really wanted to, you know, have, you know, a competitive team in 2023. They don't have a ton of capital. They don't have a ton of options. So that's why I say they'd really be putting themselves in a position beyond this season to hurt, you know, to not be a great farm system by any means. They already don't. I mean, a lot of places rank them in the, you know, bottom five of all major league teams.
They've been in that spot for quite some time.
I mean, you think they put themselves in a better position under Paramazzi than they were under Billy Epler? I mean, that was probably a pretty dark era for them in terms of their farm system. And it's better. I mean, I think that their coaches and minor leagues are better, and I think that they're overall in, like, a better position. But is it enough right now to put yourself in a position where you want to be buyers and you could ship off all these guys? I don't think so.
It's like a real rock in a hard spot type of
dude. Situation. I mean, I'm Sam's editor now, so I read what this guy's writing every day, and almost every time I'm like, damn, they're in a tough spot. That's, like, literally my reaction every time you file a story, man.
It's just an unenviable spot. Like, it's just
brutal.
What do you do?
Like, yeah.
I go back and forth every day on it. And that's just me. Like, I'm sure that they're doing the same thing. Like, you know,
and it strikes me that it goes, the chain of, like, decisions that led here goes back so far, you know, like, it predates Manassian, like, it probably in some ways predates Epler. I mean, you're dealing with just so much, and it, you know, it flows obviously, as Sam, as you may know, we're the only pro labor baseball podcast. It probably flows from ownership, you know, and that's, it's hard to, I mean, that's the one constant with, you know, with the team is ownership.
That's the point I always try to get across from people. Because I always get asked this question, like on regular radio hits or whatever, about like, well, why is it that they have these guys and they don't win? And my answer is always Artie Moreno, because that's the reason. He's the reason. I mean, they just have not invested in the ways they need to invest. And he's had probably too much of a hand in baseball operations decisions to really be good. As I said, they're not.
The Jock Peterson Ross Stripling trade comes to mind, where the Dodgers were just like giving them away because we're like, oh, we got to like get under the luxury tax, take two like former All-Stars. And this trade just got scrapped because of a timeline issue.
Yeah. So he was just frustrated, right? I mean, that was before my time, but you know, I read about that. And it's like those guys have what is their combined war? I mean, like probably five or six in the last couple of years. And then you have Luis Renjifo, who is going to be the primary guy the Angels sent out, who's not had a lot of success in the major leagues. He was okay last year. He's had a really bad year this year. So it's like, that's who you would have lost and what you could have gotten back like that. Yeah. Like that's a great example of just like decisions that have been made over the course of time that have put them in this position.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's, and you're right. Like it is, it, that is the, cause I think there is like, sometimes when I watch the, when I think about like the current setup of the Dodgers, we've talked about this a little bit on the show, right? Like so much of watching the Dodgers, it's like, holy crap, they have Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. Like, that just puts you so much further ahead of the competition every day when Dave Roberts gets to write out his lineup, right? Well, like, Phil Nevin, you know, and Trout obviously is a little more injury-prone than either of those guys, but Phil Nevin, you know, very often can write out Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in his lineup. But what he doesn't have is the infrastructure behind him that the Dodgers have spent years and years and years building, you know, in terms of the, you know, the player development system, you know, the sort of fluidity up and down the chain, you know, all that, you know, sort of stuff. And like it sort of demonstrate, like the Dodgers to me, like demonstrate how far two elite players can take you. And the Angels demonstrate like how much more you need outside of that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've, you know, when I first started on this beat, like one of the things I did a lot of was go and I went to like AA to look at like the way that the players are being treated. I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, that there are a lot of things in place now over the last 2 years that have changed in terms of, you know, obviously the minor leaguers are now unionized and there are some like just regulations in place that Major League Baseball has to abide by in order to like, you know, just to be able to like, have a functioning minor league system. So that's like those things have changed. But when I first got there, I mean, these players were getting treated worse than, you know, they were probably one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball at how they treated their minor leaguers, if not the worst in a lot of ways. And there was a lot of documented examples of that. Like that plays a role in how you develop. Like the Dodgers are the best at it. Like Phil Nevin's son plays in the Dodger system. And I think he's excited about that because he knows just how good their system is at developing players. And he's talked about it. So it's like, I don't know if everyone always feels that way when they're in the Angels system. Now, I'm sure Angels players who are in their system are excited because of how often random guys are getting called up with like almost no minor league experience. But like that puts you in a good position. You could be one day in AA, like having thrown like eight professional innings, and the next day you're like on a major league mound. But that's a different story. But yeah, I mean, but that also speaks to just like they don't have guys that they can that have been in their system for a long time. They're developing. They kind of have to draft a lot of college players and then call them up because that's how you build. I mean, part of me thinks that they drafted Nolan Schanuel from Florida Atlantic in the first round this year because they're kind of looking at first base. Jared Walsh has really, you know, dealt with a lot of issues, fallen off, and this guy's a prototypical first baseman. And not many major league teams are drafting strictly out of need in the first round. I'm not saying that's what the Angels did. I do think it's possible.
Man, you know, I made this point last week, Sam, like, you know, because Andy had a similar thing about the Dodgers and the comp to the Angels, like, you know, and having Freeman and Betts, that's a big deal. But, like, where would Will Smith rank if I told you to just name, like, some of the more prominent Dodgers? Somewhere fifth? Like, you'd probably have a couple guys ahead. Like, you'd have, you know, Betts, Freeman, a couple other dudes that you can make an argument for, then Will Smith. Will Smith is, like, really like great. Like,
top, he's a top 25 amazing player in the sport, yeah.
In the sport, man. And, like, just, you know, he's a 130 OPS plus guy every year, it feels like, all right? And, like, the Angels have nothing close to that. And on the Dodgers, he's the fifth guy you'd mention. Like, it's just, it's sort of like, you know, gives you a sense of the chasm that exists there. You know, like obviously the proximity, they're both in Southern California, so they're easy comps, but also...
Well, they're both in Los Angeles, Mark.
Right. They're both in Los Angeles. Los Angeles. Yes. So like the juxtaposition there really does like bring into like clear visibility that the Angels have, in your words, been very bad. Oh my gosh, very bad for 8 years. Anyway, it just strikes me as that like this is not a situation where, oh man, they were so close. Oh, like they fell apart or what? Nope. Like you said earlier too, like we're at what? July 25, and the fact that they're, you know, even in this thing is like news for people down there. That's crazy. It's crazy.
They're in it and they got Ohtani, and that's going to be just like, what a week this is going to be. I'm like, I'm so fascinated by it.
I'm going on the record right now. I think they're making the playoffs.
Okay.
I don't know why. Oh, sorry, Mark. Yeah, no. Okay, Mark. I know your precious Blue Jays will probably hold them off. It'll be okay. Look, you got to have something to root for, okay? Here's the thing. I think if Ohtani got traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, right, like in 3 days, I think that would be like the biggest story in baseball for the rest of the year. I think it would be a complete madhouse at the Trop, like every – you know, sixth day or whatever. They'll probably use him as a bulk guy, you know, three times a week or something. but like, or if he got traded to the Orioles or wherever, like it would just be such a insane event. And it doesn't seem like we're going to get that spectacle, right? It seems like, as Sam said, they're looking for every reason not to trade him. So you might as well root for him to be in the postseason. I mean, we're rooting for the story here.
I mean, listen, I'd love to cover Angels playoff games. I think it'd be really fun. I think it would be beyond, like, you know, what we've seen, just given how long it's been, like what that would mean for these fans who've, you know, kind of been the butt of every baseball joke, including in the last 45 minutes that we've been talking. Like to kind of have that, I think would be, you know, it'd be storybook. It'd be really special. And you know, I hope for them, because I hear from them every day, you know, I hope they get that. It's tough, right? Like this means a lot to a lot of people. I think that it would be really meaningful, and I hope you're right. I mean, it'd be fun, but at the same time, like, I just think you got to be smart, you got to be realistic, and you got to really assess your chances every day over the next week about where you are. And I imagine that a lot of teams are waiting to see what the Angels do, because it's going to impact the market in so many different ways.
Oh yeah, dude, this thing's not going to start moving till like 3 days out, I bet. Like, that's what everybody's saying, that it's going to be this mad scramble. And look, quick disclaimer. All of the laughing we're doing about the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim has nothing to do with the fans. I have nothing but, like, you know, I hope that they come out of this and get what they want out of it, and like get a playoff game or two, or maybe they make a run, because like those poor folks have put up with a lot. So yeah, that's not lost upon me either. So if you know, you're an Angels fan listening to this on, like, you know, sitting in traffic on the freeway or whatever, like, understand, like, no, there's none of this. Maybe Andy's laughing at you, but I certainly am not, and Sam isn't either. Okay,
why would I laugh at the fans?
I think what it comes down to is fans feel like they're just being laughed at, when it's like, because this is what they, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like if you grow up and you're a fan of a team and it's like ingrained in who you are, I think it just feels personal. And especially for Angels fans, I just, that's the sense I get from so many people. It's just, this means more to them than just like a baseball season in a lot of ways. Cause it's like, even their owner, I mean, they call themselves, like we joked about it, they call themselves the Los Angeles Angels, but their fans are in Orange County. Their fans are not in Los Angeles. They can't even get that, and yet they still love this team.
Right. Orange County, a wonderful area, by the way, with a lot of baseball tradition and folks who do care about the team. Anyway, I appreciate Sam showing some of his Matt trauma.
I call the Angels kind of Mets West in a lot
they
of ways.
Are, dude. They really are. Like, there's a lot of, like, post-Madoff Mets vibes going on right now here. You know, that caught in the middle, trying to pretend you're something that you're not. You know what I mean? Like, it was a lot of that going on. So, yeah, that's a good comp.
There's so many things. I feel like they're in court for various reasons. I've been sued like 20 times. It's just like, not literally, but you know, it's just so many things that have happened. Their stadium deal falling apart, like all these things that kind of could just, like, they could just be regular baseball fans. Just like, why can't the Angels be a regular baseball team? And it's part of why I like covering them, that they're not, but it's, you know, it just adds.
Part of me feels like if they trade Ohtani, and I could be wrong about this, but like part of me feels like if they trade Ohtani, they're basically telling their fans, don't ever care about us again. just don't. There's no reason to watch. Like, it's going to be several more years. Like, oh, you just can't have Shohei Ohtani and replace him on the marquee with Logan O'Hop and expect it to be, you know, a one-for-one deal. Am I wrong about that?
Part of me feels like it's a little, like, it's almost selfless to trade him in some ways because it's making it more about their actual winning. And, like, that's one question I've always had is, like, are they operating in the best interest of winning? Because you look last year, how many decisions were made based on just valuing their asset a little higher in order to be able to trade, to be able to sell the team at a higher price? Like, if they were to trade Ohtani, yeah, there's, like, there is that feeling that, like, yeah, you're giving away this generational player and you're giving up on him resigning. But in other ways, I think that's like, hey, like, you're actually making baseball decisions to win baseball games. Like, because you wouldn't do that unless you felt like it was going to put you in a position to be a winning team longer term. And so in some ways, yes, I think you could feel that way. But in other ways, I look at it and I'm like, yeah, this is actually a baseball move. And I don't always know how many decisions they made over the last few years that feel like baseball moves. In some ways, it feels like a lot of the moves that they've made are more already valuing the team higher.
Sam, thank you so much for doing this. I know it's a very busy time period for you. You're in Detroit. The Lord knows where you're staying with all your hotel snafus. Yeah, man. Enjoy this week if you can. It's going to be very intense. It'll be the baseball games are really going to matter. It should be fun.
Yeah, it's the most meaningful week of baseball and that I've covered ever, and probably most meaningful week of baseball for Angels, but for the Angels and.
Quite some time.
We're saying this, dude. Sam does a great job on the beat. Like, cares about it, takes care of the readers, takes it very seriously. So if you guys haven't been reading it, start. And the folks who are reading him every day, they already know this stuff. So, you know, keep up the good work there. Good luck for the week, man. It's going to be wild.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, thank you all for listening. This has been the Roundtable. I think Grant's back next week, Mark. Is that right?
Yeah. Maybe. And we're doing a Thursday show because of the deadline, baby.
Oh, yeah. When's the deadline? So deadline's
August 1, Tuesday. So.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll be back Thursday. We'll talk about all the trades. You know, Ohtani to the Rays for, I don't know, Deeks McDeekerson and
three quarters lefty Deeks McDeekerson,
you know, Pete Lowe and David Lau, you know, whoever's on their team at this point. They just keep producing. They have a Lau tree that they shake guys and they fall out. Charlie Lau, fall who out. Knows?
Yeah. Did you see that tweet this week?
Derek Lowe,
Lowe that. Tweet. Yeah, that was great. Shotty got low. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Rate and review us. We'll see you next week. I was very wrong.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.